Welcome to episode 23. Michael Jordan.
There you go, baby.
Episode 23 of the 51 yard line. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, the incorrigible Drew Willers.
We're Hollywood as hell, but we're still very good.
Oh, that was a good one.
All right.
And to my other left, the pride of just outside Boston, Christian Schneider.
Hello, hello. Good to be back.
No Steve Cravens today, as he is in a what he calls a sports depression right now.
Yep.
It's bad. I don't understand.
AKA but too hungover to get out of bed, in my opinion.
Too much makers.
Just really sad that the sports he cares about are over. But there's still a lot of sports to talk about, and we're going to do just that. So, obviously, let's open up with the biggest storyline of the past week, which is the Warriors are your 2015 NBA champions.
Congrats to the Dubs.
Congrats to the Dubs.
Really well put together team. Really well coached team. Very, very deserving. Yeah, it's kind of cool because this is the first time I can remember in a while that, you know, I mean, obviously, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. It's not like there aren't big names on there. But I look at the Dubs, and I don't really, me personally, I don't see them as a, quote, super team. You know what I'm saying?
No
massive big three, huge names. Obviously, lots of good shooters. But just the way they're cut together, I don't think we've seen this, at least in a while. So
definitely not.
Look, when your highest paid player is sitting on the bench out of the rotation, you're not a super team.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
You know,
and when your sixth man wins finals MVP, like that's pretty
we'll talk about that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's unbelievable what they, I mean, the Dubs 67 wins in the regular season, win the NBA championship. Nobody you know, the closest they got to defeat was this final series against the Cavs.
Yeah.
I mean, they're historically great.
You couldn't have drawn it up on paper any better. Like, their season went absolutely perfectly from basically day one.
Yep.
When Tyler, you called it, you said it episodes ago, like four or five episodes ago, we were probably midway through the season, and you were like, at this point, it's NBA Finals or bust. You were like, they either win it all this point, or it's a lost season.
Absolutely.
And they showed up on the biggest stage. Obviously, we can talk, you know, we could talk about the lack of Kevin Love and the lack of Kyrie Irving, but at the end of the day, they were still down 2-1 and
won 3 straight.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I won my bet.
I was going to say,
Dubs
in 6 games. That was a good call. Good
Very
call.
Happy
you had Dubs
about
in
that.
6, too.
I did have Dubs in 6.
Dubs in 6.
I was not feeling so good about that after game 3. But
I was starting to get mad that I listened to Cousin Sal about for my betting advice. And before the series started, he tweeted out, he was just like, Warriors in 6, that's a really good bet, +420, and I was like, all right, I'll throw money down on it.
Yep.
And I was nervous there, but they pulled it out, and I won quite a decent amount of money. I'm very excited about
it. Boom, there it is.
And that dude,
congrats.
That dude, Sal,
he's
generally,
smart.
I was going to say, he's generally not
shit.
Wrong. Yeah. He's pretty good with that.
He knows his shit for sure.
I got to get my uncle out in Vegas to, you know, just binge watch Cousin
absolutely,
Sal.
Absolutely,
you know?
For sure.
He bets a lot on sports.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Absolutely. You wanted to talk about Christian Finals MVP.
I was going
to
say.
Yeah. There's. Okay, so listen. First off, I just got to put the disclaimer out here. Andre Iguodala winning MVP is an awesome accomplishment for the Dubs as a whole.
Sure.
Because it completely vindicates what Kerr's been doing all year. I mean, he asked the guy to sit on the bench, he did it completely without complaint. And when it came time to put an adjustment together after game 3, Iguodala was right there to answer the bell. He came right in, disrupted LeBron as best he could, and was a big-time game-changer on offense. That's
Absolutely.
Awesome. And that just shows what the Dubs are all about. They're all about depth. They're all about guys stepping up when their number is called. However, Andre Iguodala was not the most valuable player of the series. The most valuable player of the series was LeBron James. And there is precedent for a finals MVP coming from the losing team, because the very first one ever was Jerry West in 1969. They lost to the Celtics. Jerry West got the MVP. because he put up crazy 40 points a game all the time.
Sure.
LeBron James, you look at his numbers, they're absolutely ridiculous. And he was playing with a bunch of
with no one
schoolers.
Basically.
Yeah, you can talk about Tristan Thompson working on the O boards, and you can talk about Dellavedova having a couple of big games and doing a good job defensively for Curry the first half of the series. But LeBron James was basically playing by himself, trying to carry these guys, and he put up historically ridiculous numbers. He was the best player by far in that series.
Very true.
He dominated every single game that he played in, statistically.
Absolutely.
And except for, I think, maybe one where Iguodala outscored him.
I think it was game four after he had, like, two straight, like, 40-point
right.
games.
But he still had a triple-double.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That was his worst game, a triple-double. Like, LeBron should have been the MVP. I think that would have said a lot, and I think that would have kind of motivated the Cavs to get their act together, really.
Absolutely.
Because, next year, not that the Cavs did anything wrong. I mean, frankly, I think the Cavs are far and away the favorites to win the East.
They are. They're the favorites to win the finals.
If they bring back Love and Irving, you know, and all those guys, I wouldn't be surprised if they hang a banner next year.
Yeah. I will probably put a little bit of my winnings on that simple fact. Once those bets go up, like I would be surprised if they didn't make another run next year. As long as Kyrie's healthy, as long as LeBron's healthy, and
as long as the East is still struggling,
right? And I personally think they should be bringing Kevin Love back. I don't think they should really let him go after just one up and down season. Because at the end of the day, he was still an 18-14 guy for the entire year. Like, that's pretty important out of your stretch
four. Did
he really
have 14 boards? Wow. Didn't know that.
I really, just kind of branching off that, I do believe LeBron James was the MVP, and when we made our predictions at the start of the finals, I picked Cavs in 7 because, A, while Kyrie wasn't 100% healthy, I didn't think he was going to shatter his kneecap in game
right.
one.
No one did.
Nope. Granted, Steve brought up a great point. Blatt probably should not have been playing him for 43 minutes in that first game. Not particularly smart.
Yeah, but that was an overtime game.
And that's true. That is very true. But I did want to talk a little bit about the leadership of LeBron James, because that was the other reason why I thought that was going to be the difference maker, because I felt like, I mean, obviously, out of everybody on the floor in the entire finals, LeBron has the most experience. This was his 6th straight finals. I thought that was going to be the difference maker.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was going to get everybody, elevate everybody on his team to get to that level. Not that I thought the Dubs were necessarily going to shrink in the moment, because they still are they were the best team in the regular season. They were the best team in the West, which is astonishingly, that conference is stacked. But his comments in his last two post-game press conferences, like, just when I think personally, and maybe this is just me, just when I think personally that he is taking a step forward as a leader and maturing, he says some of what I think are just the dumbest, most ridiculous things, and it just displays the absolute worst leadership.
Which comments?
Well, first of all, I understand that he's the greatest player in the world. Okay. I will not argue that to anybody. I won't even argue that to him. That being said, I'm a firm believer, and this is how I feel in all sports, if you have to say that you are the best in something, I'm sorry, I find that you're not. Jordan never said that. Jordan never got up at a podium.
Not in so many words.
But didn't have to.
No. I mean,
everybody's telling him it.
No, absolutely. And but that's the thing is Jordan. I mean, if somebody asked Jordan why, like, because I remember it in it was the East. Sorry to bring this up. It was the Eastern Conference semifinals in '98. His last finals run. He beat the Pacers in 7.
Oh, we're going to win game 7.
He goes, but he didn't say it because I'm the best player in the world. He said, I don't care what happened in the other series. I don't care what's happening now. You have to come to Chicago. That's totally fine. I totally understand that. I don't understand what LeBron is thinking standing up and saying, whether it's true or not true, I'm not a believer that that's the way you lead a team.
I agree.
That's just not a way you fire up your troops. So there's that. That was really disappointing. And then to top it off, I understand, and again, he's not wrong, but to stand up at a podium after you've lost the finals, you're not the only one who's upset. You're not the only one who's disappointed.
The whole team is.
So to stand up there and say that you guys ran out of talent is obnoxious.
Yeah.
It's obnoxious.
No, I'm with you.
It's the equivalent of him calling out, and I don't like Kevin Love at all. I've never, ever, 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 you know, minced words about that. I just despise him. That being said, LeBron had no right to call him out on Twitter.
Yeah.
At all.
That's fucked up.
That was the equivalent of this, I felt like. Yeah. And instead of doing it to just one guy, he basically called out the whole team.
Yeah.
If you're going to lose, you got to learn to lose graciously. And he has proven time and time again that he doesn't know how to do that.
It's very true.
He doesn't.
It's a good point. It is a good point.
Jordan at least lost graciously when he did lose.
And he didn't respect.
And I remember him saying specifically, he goes, I had absolutely no respect because when they finally got over the hump and beat the bad boys in Detroit, there was a few guys that stuck around to shake Jordan's hand after the game. But Isaiah Thomas didn't, and Bill Laimbeer didn't, and they bailed.
And Mark McGwire
didn't. Exactly.
People need to remember what an asshole Mark McGwire
is. He's terrible. You're damn right. And so, yes, absolutely should have been the finals MVP, but I was really disappointed. I was really, really disappointed.
Yeah, I'm with you. Because, you know, when I first heard him say those comments about, like I'm not worried because I'm the best player in the game, I was like, oh, I actually loved it. Because I was thinking to myself, okay, this is him putting pressure on himself, right? To perform. No, but here, there's like a second part to this. I loved it. I thought it was similar to Jordan saying we're going to win game 7. He's like, oh, he's putting it all on himself. All right. He knows that he's got to go out there and play his best game. He's been playing big. He's going to go out there and defend his home turf.
Right.
But then he mouthed off after they lost too. And I'm just and I remember what you said about Love. And what he said about Love that you brought up. And I was just like, no, he's just being a dick. Like,
he really,
it really
is just
was
being a dick.
And I was surprised by that, but I shouldn't have been. I mean, walking off when they lost to the Magic in 09, not shaking hands.
I agree.
You know, I mean, walking off again, you know, when the Celtics beat him. You know, he wins well. He didn't lose well. And it's disappointing to see.
And I keep trying to tell myself, you know, I understand he has a lot of haters, and I keep trying to tell myself, okay, he, you know, the things he did, I kept trying to say, you know, he was young. He was still growing up. There's no excuse now. You've been in this league long enough. You've been to 6 finals. You should be gracious. And that's the other thing. You should know that if you lose graciously, none of this is really on you. The whole world already kind of knows that you don't have your other 2 best scorers.
Yeah, why do you need to call attention to it?
Absolutely.
At the expense of your teammates? Like, that's who fought their hardest possible.
Absolutely.
It's not like they gave up and didn't try. Like, they did all that they could, unless you're J.R. Smith, who shot about as poorly as I've ever seen him shoot. But that's beside the point.
Absolutely.
Like, his entire team worked for him, and to be honest, they should have gone deeper in the rotation than they did. So,
oh, absolutely.
I don't think it's fair to call out everybody else like that. It's fucked up.
I was thinking about the other greats. I'm sorry to interrupt. About the other, just other greats that I consider, thinking of the other greatest players in their respective leagues. Peyton, like, not to mix sports too much, but Peyton Manning would never do that.
Gretzky never did that.
Jordan did it. Tom would never have done it. Tom Brady would never do that.
Hell, his wife didn't. Brady had to shut her down.
Absolutely. if you really are the leader, and he said time and time again throughout the series, my job is to lead this team the best that I can. That's not leadership.
And at the end of the day, he failed.
It's as simple as he really could not have failed. We could easily be sitting here right now and be saying, you know what, LeBron did not fail. If he would have gone up and been like, you know what, I'm really proud of the guys we had in that locker room. I'm really proud of the way they stepped up. We came into this shorthanded, found ourselves even more shorthanded, went up one game, and I think we're going to be back next year. Yeah. Nobody would bat an eye. I wouldn't. I'd be like,
that'd been great.
That should have been your finals MVP. That's great leadership.
But because he's a sore loser.
It just sucks.
throws his teammates under the bus.
I'll tell you, and I can't believe I'm saying this. Even Kobe didn't really do that. Kobe talked years later about how he had to play with Smush Parker, but he didn't do it after they lost their series.
Absolutely. That's a valid point.
And let's put it this way.
He just calls his players out in practice.
But that's fine. That's what
you
do.
Right.
But here's the thing.
Jordan did that too.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Jordan punched Steve Kerr in the face. Mm-hmm. I mean, but think about it. When Kobe Bryant mouths off at his teammates less than you, you got a problem, man. Because Kobe Bryant's not a good teammate.
That's very true.
What did you guys think of the now reports about LeBron emasculating David Blatt and essentially making him, at one point, he's drawing up a play in front of the entire team and essentially making Blatt erase the whiteboard and draw something else up?
Oh, I mean, I knew it. It's been talked about, like, off and on all year. Like, David Blatt is not really the coach of that team. It's Coach LeBron James. Like, it's about as close to a player coach as we've had in the past three decades. Right. Like, it's not fair to David Blatt, but at the same time, he could probably be doing more to take charge if he really wants to be the coach of that team long term. Mm. But I think it's shitty for LeBron to be disrespecting his head coach like that, regardless of whether he's the greatest player in the NBA or not. Like, I don't think you do that to the coach of your team. Like, that's really screwed up.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing with Blatt is, like, you know, yeah, we can talk about, like, him, like, trying to call a timeout against the Bulls and all that stuff. But, like, I mean, when you watch him, like, you know, mic'd up in the locker room or, you know, in the huddle during the finals, I mean, the guy's not mailing it in. I mean,
no,
he does care
about this team.
He's passionate. He's trying to drum it into them. It's not like the guy is coming in there and, like, you know, content to let LeBron take over. I mean, look, the guy even, like, took LeBron aside when they won the Eastern Conference Finals. He said, like, what you've done to the city is really, really good. And LeBron even then kind of blew him off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, like, you got to understand that the guy, even though Blatt is a first-year NBA coach, he is a coach for a reason. And
he's one of the most well-respected coaches in European basketball history.
Right, and if you look at the Warriors all buying into Kerr immediately, I mean, Iguodala and Lee could not have been happy with the fact that they were sitting the bench.
No.
And Iguodala said it when he was interviewed about it, and he was just like, I wasn't happy, but it worked. So
but he bought in. Harrison Barnes bought in, which was huge.
Bought in, yeah. Harrison Barnes totally improved. I mean, you know, Bogut didn't make a peep when they sat him down in the finals.
Not at all.
And listen, here's the most important thing. Lee and Iguodala bought in and didn't complain before it was proved that that was
a
good idea.
It's very true.
You know, from day one, they didn't complain. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, they switched Iguodala out in the middle of the season. I mean, from training camp, Kerr came in and said, Barnes is starting, you're sitting. And it was, I mean, they totally bought in and they completely respected their coach, who's also a rookie coach. Yeah, he played for Pop and Jackson and Wilkins and Olsen.
That doesn't automatically mean you're going to be a good coach.
Byron Scott played with Magic. What a joke of a coach he is.
Jason Kidd didn't, you know, I mean, it's not like he was coached by pushovers, you know.
No.
Like, and he didn't nearly have the same, and like, granted, you could make the argument that Kerr was working with, you know, superior talent. But, you know.
Listen, like, Robert Horry won a lot of rings, too. That doesn't mean he's going to be a successful head coach. I'm not saying he can't be, saying that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
You know? But Steve Kerr was in the same boat, and he hadn't actually coached teams to championships
right.
yet. And everybody respected him, and nobody respected Blatt.
I think that's – and I just think that's really unfair to David Blatt.
It is.
Like, whether you like the guy or not, like, I
wish Steve was here. He'd be going crazy about
absolutely.
Us. Yeah,
well, and that's
Blatt
the thing is, you know,
I don't think it's fair to have any negative or really positive opinion about David Blatt because you didn't really get to experience him as a coach. The most positive things I can say are the things that we saw during mic'd up, like during games, like when he was really like trying to give his team like the encouragement and like the pep talks that they needed to get. Like to get through these games, like that was great. That's what a coach should be doing. But other than that, I don't think you can say negative or positively whether he's a good NBA coach because he didn't really get a shot.
And
it also should be noted, granted, unless we find out more behind the scenes stuff about LeBron, it should be noted that it was Blatt's decision earlier in the regular season to sit Kevin Love late in games.
Right. Yep.
Games that they needed to win.
Right.
It also should be noted that, I mean, it's not like Love suddenly, it just clicked for Love, and it hurts me to say this, but yes, down the last third of the season, he was better in that system.
Ah, and while we're on that subject, let me make a point. The stats that I was referencing, I said he finished the season 18-14. He finished the season 17-10, but the last third of the season he was averaging 18-14. Yeah, so he really picked it up in that down the stretch of the regular season.
And it's not like LeBron made that happen. I mean,
no?
that's in my eyes, that's good coaching. That's
right. Yeah, that's a very good point.
That's Blatt stuff. And believe me, Kevin Love is not always the most coachable person. No. He's not. And he's not, like LeBron,
he's a baby.
He's not a big respecter of authority. Nope. So, and it sounds like, I mean, and granted, you know, this could be all BS, and we got to find out what LeBron wants, because LeBron's going to get what he wants. But if, you know, if Love wants to come back, I can't see any reason why he won't opt out. The salary cap will inflate. He'll get the money he wants, and he'll be back next season.
Right. Yeah, there's an article up right now that literally says LeBron and Kevin Love are expected to opt out.
Yeah. Opt out, give more money.
What the Cavs owner was saying, or was it GM? I can't remember which one it was. He just made the point. He's like, listen, in this current situation with
GM,
contract,
yep.
Yeah, he was just like, they're going to opt out. We're not worried that they are. We knew it was going to happen. It's just a smart move for a player.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think, listen, if LeBron's going to be back in Cleveland.
If he's not,
he needs to get used to the fact that everyone's going to hate him all over again.
No, he'll be back.
I agree with you.
That would be career suicide. Right. To bail on Cleveland again after one year.
Right. Yeah, that would be dumb.
I've always had this theory, you know, going way back that I thought Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook would wind up teaming up to play for the Lakers.
I still think that's a possibility.
It is a possibility, but it's not happening next year because, I mean, Westbrook's still under contract with the Thunder at least another year. But at the same time, who wants to run into that dumpster fire in L.A., man? I wouldn't want to play for Jim Buss.
The only reason why
He needs to be gone.
Jerry's rolling over in his grave.
Why I thought Love would go to L.A. is because I was always a firm believer that Love was all about Love and the box score and the numbers he puts up. And going to L.A. and playing for his hometown would give him the opportunity to do that, to be in front of his friends and family in a place that he adores, lighting it up night in, night out. That being said, Love said it time and time again in Minnesota. He wants to win. And his best opportunity to win a ring is to stay in Cleveland right now. Stay in the East.
Absolutely.
And to roll and to stay healthy. So, opt out. He'll sign back. Unless LeBron just straight up doesn't want him. I guess if LeBron really has that much leverage with Cleveland's front office,
which he does.
I mean, that would be the only reason why I could see Love not back in a Cleveland uniform. Right. But, yeah.
All right, let's move on. What else did we want to discuss today?
Draft?
NBA draft.
Yeah, okay. NBA draft is Thursday night.
Absolutely. I for one, super excited. Being from Minnesota, this is the first time ever we have finally landed the number one pick with the lottery. It sounds like it's pretty much a lock for Karl Anthony Towns. I don't know what you guys have read or heard or how you feel
about that. Everybody's saying it.
But it sounds like it should be Towns only worked out with one team. That was the Minnesota Timberwolves. I do want to bring up one thing. I was listening to Twin City Sports Radio. Paul Allen, PA, my main man, had coach, GM, and team president Flip Saunders on and also co-owner Flip Saunders, Flipnosis, on the on his talk show, and Flip brought up an interesting point. Both of you guys are big time college basketball watchers.
Yeah.
Flip Saunders brought it up, you know, and obviously he can't hop on the air and be like, you know, Towns is the lock. You know, I mean, he's got to smokescreen a little bit and you know, see if he can't garner a little bit of interest for the number one pick. He's got to do his due diligence.
So he talked about, he was like, obviously we like Towns. We, you know, we like that, like, you know, he's the best two-way big man in the draft is what he said. But the one thing he did bring up, and I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this, he said Jahlil Okafor, due to his footwork specifically, reminded him of Tim Duncan. And I thought that was a little bit extreme. I do think Okafor is very good. I don't see the Duncan comparisons. Personally, I don't know.
That's the first I've heard that. Absolutely. And I don't even know where to begin to... I could not make an argument to agree with that at all.
I'll hop on that because, I mean, obviously I was watching Jahlil Okafor all year.
Absolutely.
Because I hate Duke. Like, of course you do. And I wanted to see them lose. Here's the thing with Jahlil Okafor. He really does have great footwork. He is incredible. And if you and I actually watch a lot of old ACC basketball games. He, in a funky way, he actually does remind me of college Tim Duncan.
Really?
There's a little bit to that. Here's the difference. That's his offensive footwork is the only thing that reminds me of Tim Duncan.
Gotcha.
He can't shoot free throws. He's not a very good rebounder for his position. He's huge, so that helps him get boards.
I was gonna say he can't really shoot. Period. He doesn't have a signature shot like Duncan's Duncan's bank shot.
Right. Exactly. He's very, very good at dominating on the block against guys way smaller than him.
Yeah.
When he gets to the NBA, that's not going to be a thing anymore. And in addition to that, he plays atrocious defense. It's not like he's like not a good defender for his size. He's a bad defender.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember watching the first game that North Carolina played against them in Cameron, and Carolina was just getting layups at the rim at will. And if you remember Carolina this past year, they couldn't attack the basket at all. Watching that, I was just like, this guy should not be the number one pick. Everybody was talking about how he was a surefire lock for one for months and months and months. And then I just watched him. I'm just like, he can't defend. He can't rebound. And, you know, people do worry about his legs. He's not like the difference to him in Towns is way more athletic. He's a better build than Okafor. Okafor is kind of unwieldy. He could very easily be a Greg Oden type situation.
He also commits a lot of really bad fouls.
Like goes back to the stupid defense.
Yeah, like his basketball IQ is not up to par for being a number one or number two pick. Obviously, it's looking more like he's going to be the number two pick, but still, I would be worried if I was Los Angeles a little bit by taking him at number two.
I mean, the thing is, like, you know, listen, for all the nonsense I'm talking about him, he really is a good pro prospect.
Yeah.
His offense really is good.
But also, I mean, that name doesn't bode well.
Okafor.
Well, let's
Emeka Okafor.
Let's give Emeka Okafor his due. He wasn't a bad pro. He played good. I mean, he was a rookie of the year.
Didn't Jordan make him cry in practice?
Probably.
I'm pretty sure Jordan made him cry.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Jordan probably made a lot of people cry.
This is
I always loved Emeka Okafor. He single-handedly beat the crap out of Duke in one Final Four. That was great.
So,
and Ben Gordon.
So. Obviously,
another guy who had problems, by the way. But.
Yes, yeah.
So, okay. Obviously, right now, me being a Minnesota sports fan, all I'm hearing about is how awesome Towns is. I want you guys to tell me the cons of Karl-Anthony Towns. I've been told he's the best two-way big man in the draft.
He
obviously can pop the tray. You can be confident in the fact that if he decides to pop at least four or five threes, you know, that... You know, you can be, unlike most big men, you can be really okay with that. What about Towns needs a lot of work and a lot of development?
It's not so much what I think I see needs work. It's that he hasn't had to be the guy yet.
Gotcha.
The thing is, when he played in Kentucky, he played in that platoon system. When he was on the court, he was with Willie Cauley-Stein, who is another really good prospect. Cauley-Stein's a mess offensively.
Who's projected to go to my Indiana Pacers right now.
You should feel good about that.
I would feel very good if
especially
we picked
now
up.
That Hibbert's bouncing,
Exactly. He's a game-changing defender. I mean, because he can guard 1-5. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, that does cover a lot for the other big man in that system because Cauley-Stein is switching on guards. Towns wasn't really forced to be put in pick-and-roll situations. Towns played 21 minutes a game. I mean, I want to see, for one thing, I'd love to see his endurance. I mean, he's got to play, you know, 38, 39
minutes
potentially.
Yeah, essentially almost double that once he becomes
that in the pros. I'd love
good
to,
starter.
No, I mean, he looks like he's in shape, but who knows? You know, I mean, I just, he has to, I'd love to see what happens when he's playing a full game as the leader of his team. Because, sure. You know, when he's going to be teamed up with, you know, with Wiggins, it's going to be him and Wiggins' team.
Yeah.
And they got to go out there and they're expected to win. They're young. I want to see how he responds to that. You know, Kentucky covered a lot of their players' deficiencies. You know, the fact that the Harrison twins are throwing their hats in the ring is a joke. They're going to be horrible. You know? But what I want to see, he hasn't proved to me that he can be a dominating player just because he hasn't had the minutes and the opportunity to do it.
Right.
It doesn't mean that he can't, but there's that uncertainty factor.
I'm also hearing that if he wants to be as good at the NBA level as he was in the college level, he needs to bulk up big
yep.
time because he will
I'm
get
not worried
bullied.
About that.
You're not?
I'm not worried about that. I mean, yeah. watch
I mean,
Dwight
that's
Howard
a, that's
when
an,
he got drafted.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, that's a normal thing. Like that,
true.
From
true.
Going from college to pro ball.
And that's an effort thing. I mean,
yeah.
Carl Anthony Towns, the one thing that nobody's worried about is his work ethic. He does seem like he works his butt off.
Absolutely.
Here's what I will say. This is the best example I can come up with. Here's Carl Anthony Towns' risk. His risk is being a Marvin Williams.
Okay.
And because the thing is, you know, Marvin Williams, just, you know, knowing him from Carolina, he was the sixth man. He was a good player at North Carolina for 1 year, but he didn't have a whole lot of responsibilities. And everybody saw potential, potential, potential. They took him too. The Hawks did. They took him over Chris Paul.
Ugh.
And that was brutal. And
it's almost bad. As bad as the Wolves
and Marvin Williams,
Steph Curry.
And Marvin Williams was not a bad pro, but he was never a star. And the problem is they looked at his potential, but he hadn't actually shown full minutes yet.
Right.
And that's what I'm worried about with Towns. I think he'll be better than Marvin Williams no matter what, but he might not be the dominating big man that people think he could be, just because he hasn't proved it for sure.
Does Towns start day one for the Wolves?
Absolutely.
You think
yeah.
so?
Oh, yeah.
I'd be
yeah.
shocked
oh,
if he doesn't.
I would be
Absolutely.
Shocked if he doesn't, too.
Gotcha.
And they'd be stupid not to, just because, like, you know, even if he's not 100%, like, do a trial by fire, you know?
Absolutely.
Like, mm-hmm. Just make him play hard. He's 19 when he starts?
That makes sense.
I mean, Just play him.
I was gonna say, you might as well, if you're the Wolves with so much young talent right now, you might as well get all those young guys out there as fast as you
Absolutely.
Can and get them to grow up as fast as possible.
Absolutely.
So who's going number two? Is it definitely Okafor? Do you think that
yes.
maybe
the Lakers? Okafor. I think the Lakers have made it pretty clear.
They're done looking.
Where does Moutier go?
That's it. That's the wild card
yeah?
because Moutier, you know. People get foreigners either really, really right or really, really wrong. And he's not a foreigner, but I mean, played at a foreign league
yeah.
instead of
yeah.
college. Because he falls under that category.
Kind of like a Brandon Jennings.
Yeah,
who was
exactly.
in Italy.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. I don't know. I mean, the guy who I love is D'Angelo Russell. And it's hard for me to picture somebody taking Moutier over him.
They won't, because the Knicks will take D'Angelo Russell at four, probably.
Right. Who would go three then?
I
thought it was
that,
it's Sixers, isn't it?
What's his name?
Or is it the foreign guy?
It's the foreign guy.
I can't pronounce his last name. It's just the P.
Just the dude.
Kristaps Porzingis.
Porzingis,
from Slovenia, right?
Right, Slovenia.
Latvia.
Ah, balls. Whatever. Yeah. Same difference.
Whatever.
And now we've just alienated all Slovenia and Latvia.
That's Chad. That's Chad Ford of ESPN's. His latest mock draft says
he's got the Sixers taking him.
Yeah.
What's Porzingis' build again? Because he's a is he a big?
Yeah, he's a power
yeah,
forward.
Like yeah, exactly. He's a four.
Gotcha.
The Sixers love their big men.
They seem to.
Well, they're not loving Joel Embiid right
yeah.
now.
Well, yeah, but I guess I should say they love taking their big
men. They love taking their big
men. Correct me if I'm wrong. Embiid might not be ready to go for this season.
He won't.
Too.
He's
yeah.
got have big time surgery.
That
yeah.
sucks.
That's rough.
Quick question for you, the Pacers fan. I brought it up briefly. Sounds like Hibbert. It sounds like right now, from what I've been reading, Hibbert's gone, or at least is opting out. And it sounds like
they're definitely shopping him. Actually, a good friend of mine that I work with, my buddy Drew, actually ran into Roy Hibbert at Dodger Stadium
no
the other
shit.
Day. So
Very
it sounds
cool.
like Dodge. It sounds like Roy Hibbert might be talking
to the Lakers.
To the Lakers, yeah.
Oh, God.
Gotcha. Well, it's
they have
yeah.
they have the
cap
room.
Room, absolutely.
But yeah, but why? But that okay. So
I'm not saying
that.
I'm not
Julius
saying
Randle, Okafor,
I'm not,
and Hibbert. That's too many bigs,
dude. I don't know. I'm just saying. My boy told me that he ran into him, and it's. Like,
and it's not like Roy Hibbert looks like somebody else.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was definitely Roy Hibbert.
He's pretty good. But I just wanted to ask you really quick. So, let's say Hibbert opts out. Obviously, they're projected to take Willie Trill. You get PG back. Mm-hmm. You guys already had a
pretty, given the circumstances, had a pretty damn decent season. Probably should have won some games, a little bit more games.
Probably, we were one game away from making the playoffs. We probably should have, but... are you going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. So you get PG back. Hopefully he's back to being...
Oh, you might, like, thank your stars, dude. I mean, seriously, if you get Willie Cauley-Stein and he pans out, that's worth whooped in the first round.
I guess that's what I'm getting at is how do you feel right now? Or, I mean, obviously, we're a ways away. We just wrapped up the NBA Finals. But how do you as a Pacers fan feel about that going forward?
Oh, I feel good about it. Our backcourt isn't a question as long as PG is healthy. We've still got George Hill. We know what we're doing in our backcourt. It's really our front court that is the wild card right now. It's like, what's Roy Hibbert doing? What are we doing with David West? Like, there's a possibility we could be bouncing him too, as much as that would pain me, because he is one of the, like, veteran, he is the veteran leader of our team.
Oh yeah, I love his David West.
I don't know, taking Willie Cauley-Stein would be huge. It would really help us on the defensive end. I mean, that's not our strongest suit. Like, PG is obviously an all-pro defender, but besides that, we don't really have, like, the greatest defensive squad in the world, so Willie Cauley-Stein would really help that. I don't know, I think we'll be back to the playoffs this year for sure. How far we get is really up in the air right now. It really depends on who we decide to take at 11, and frankly, it should be Willie Cauley-Stein if he's available.
Yeah.
And as long as PG comes back super healthy and ready to go, I think we'll find ourselves right back in the mix in the Eastern Conference for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, shoot, we were barely out of the mix even without PG for a season, so right. Having him back will be super helpful.
Right.
As elite college basketball minds, again, I know we're way, way, way out. Do you have any early picks for Rookie of the Year?
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not going to be anyone from Kentucky or Wisconsin.
I completely agree.
I'm going to say D'Angelo Russell.
God damn it. Yeah. I wish I'd gone first. The same thing.
You could say the same thing.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah.
Man.
No,
yeah.
But I literally was about to say I'm going to go out on a limb and say D'Angelo Russell. Yeah. And that's exactly what you did.
And it's because he's going to get the most playing time of any rookie.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I also think...
The thing is, Towns is not going to be the guy
absolutely.
In Minnesota the first
exactly.
year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's still...
D'Angelo Russell, as long as he...
Though if Russell goes to the Knicks, he might have to deal with having to just dump it to Carmelo the whole time in that stupid knockoff triangle they're trying to do.
Well...
Which
would
stink.
That's fair, but he can still get himself 15 points a game, and that's good enough to get Rookie of the Year on a lot of years.
In a funny way, you know,
he's still in the East.
I do like the Knicks, and my buddy Josh is going to hate me for this because he really wants Russell, I think, but I hope the Knicks don't get him, because when you're playing a triangle offense, a good point guard is completely wasted on you.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
When was the last time the triangle had a point guard? I mean, you know, Lakers and...
Steve Nash and...
That's not a triangle. I mean, that's 7 seconds or less.
Oh, good point.
I mean, because you remember Jackson didn't coach Nash. That was...
D'Antoni. No.
That was not a triangle.
No.
Well, that was... No, it wasn't. Not in Phoenix. Never mind.
The Lakers tried to do some, like, Princeton offense nonsense. It was
was a dumpster fire for sure.
Oh, God. It's like, I'm sorry, you're not Pete Carril. Like, stop trying to be.
For sure.
All right, anything else on that?
I got nothing.
I hope my Celtics get somebody good, but they won't.
Yeah.
Way too far down in the draft.
I was going to say.
They're, what, 16?
Yeah, I mean.
It seems like it's rough in the NBA. You either got to get a top five pick or from what I know, you guys, again, are bigger college basketball watchers than I. I mostly just focus on the Big Ten and Gophers ball. That being said, I really only focus on it when they are competitive, and they have not been that this last season. So yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, that's good for me on draft, I think.
All right, well, let's do some trivia real quick.
For sure.
You guys are all still tied, unless you both get this question wrong. someone will move ahead of the absent Steve Cravens, and that is no one's fault but his own. So, in honor of Max Scherzer's no-no yesterday.
Nice.
I've got a no-hitter question for you guys.
Oh, boy.
All right, so yesterday for Max Scherzer's no-hitter, he struck out 10 batters. Put your phone away.
No, I'm bringing up my notes so we can write down the answer.
Oh, right, right. I forgot we were doing that.
Oh, right.
Max Scherzer fanned 10 batters in his no-hitter yesterday, but who holds the record for the most strikeouts in a no-no? Is it A, David Wells, B, Randy Johnson, C, Nolan Ryan, or D, Sandy Koufax?
Oh, this is tough.
Yeah.
David Wells, Randy Johnson, Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax.
But all these pitchers did have a no-no.
Oh. So that yes. They all had no-hitters. Yes. I'm not tricking you. Like, I'm not going to trick you like that.
I am going to go with this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, one more time, the question, who holds the record for the most strikeouts in a no-hitter? David Wells, Randy Johnson, Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax. Drew, who'd you go with?
Randy Johnson.
Christian?
Sandy Koufax.
Man, I stumped you guys again.
Oh, damn it!
It's Nolan Ryan.
Is it really?
17 strikeouts.
See, Koufax was my second guess.
See, my second guess would have been Ryan, because he had the most no-hitters.
He had the most no-hitters, but the reason why I didn't pick him...
Odds of him having the highest strikeouts.
The reason why I didn't pick him is because he worked fast, and he was... I mean, he definitely was... I mean, he's one of the greatest pitchers ever. But usually the way he got his no-nos, I felt like, was just he pitched to contact. And he
17 strikeouts, really?
17 strikeouts versus the Detroit Tigers on July 15th, 1973.
Hot damn.
Express. Was that his first then? Because, I mean...
I don't honestly know.
No, but I mean, like, because, I mean, he was pitching into the 90s.
Because I just was trying to think about, on that list, who are the guys, who are the best strikeout pitchers on that list, and I felt like it was either going to be Koufax or Johnson. Yeah. I felt like, I mean, obviously Nolan Ryan's great, but Nolan Ryan is he was more about, I felt like, pitch to contact and keeping guys off balance.
That's an unbelievable performance, a no-hitter with 17 strikeouts.
Speaking of elite company, real quick, can we talk about Chris Sale? Holy shit.
He's going off.
Oh, my God. Five straight games or 12 with 12 or more strikeouts. The only other two guys to do that was Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez.
How about some run support, White Sox?
Man,
come on.
Dude. I've been there.
I'm losing my fucking mind over here.
I've been there.
Even when we win, we can only get three runs.
At least my Sox put up some W's for Pedro when he was doing that.
Yeah.
It's like,
sucks.
Geez.
It's a just... I didn't get to read it because I don't subscribe to ESPN Insider for some dumb reason, but Buster Olney put up an article today or yesterday that basically said why the White Sox should deal Chris Sale now. And I'm like, yes, but no, but maybe.
Just for humanity.
I mean, well, it just seems...
No, just to get 1,000 pieces
I was
going to
say, absolutely.
Like, we would get the farm for Chris Sale.
Absolutely.
With the way he's been performing right now.
Because at this point right now, you guys are looking like sellers.
But I love Chris Sale. I don't want to lose one of the best pitchers in the major leagues right now.
No,
because I'm selfish.
I completely agree. You know, we had to go through the same thing at one point with... We had to make that decision with Johan Santana.
Right.
Unfortunately, the Twins did not trade him. They let him go to free agency, and I think we really deeply regretted that.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, Johan fell off the map,
yeah,
but we also did too, and we were struggling for pitches for a while.
Right.
Because we banked on Frankie Liriano being the guy, and he was not. So, as of right now, I think it might be just a tad bit too early to go that route. I think they need to see where they're at post-All-Star break.
Which is crazy cause how quick that's
coming up here quick, but we still got a lot of games to play before that happens. Anything can happen in baseball. It could click all of a sudden, and and Robin Ventura could finally have the White Sox batting like crazy. Jose Abreu could catch fire again, and you know, it is tough right now. But if they do find themselves at a point All-Star break where they are sellers, I think he should be a chip to sell. because they could get a lot.
Yeah,
for
we should at least be looking at offers as a much as it pains lot. Me to say.
And that's just the nature of baseball. And yeah. and that's the thing is, you're either gonna deal him now or you're gonna have to pay him a shit ton at
that's
some point.
That's very true.
And we did that. I mean, and not to compare, you know, pitchers to catchers or any other position, but Twins went big on Joe Mauer after one big season, and we let AJ Pierzynski go. And if you had to ask me right now who I would want on my team and in my lineup, I don't like AJ, but AJ hits a lot better and has hit a lot better and been more durable than Joe Mauer for a long time.
I love AJ,
and I would have very, very happily. Now, if we could get some other pieces in place, but you know, hindsight's 20/20. Joe's a class act. He's a Twin Cities guy. What are you gonna do?
All right.
Real quick, actually, yeah. I mean, just because we're on baseball, A-Rod hit his 3,000th.
Yay! Whoop-de-fucking-do.
I know,
A-Rod.
I hate the guy, but like, it just does raise an interesting question. It's like, what exactly, you know? I mean, does none of that matter at all?
No.
No. I mean,
not to me.
I'm inclined to agree, but it's just it is interesting, you know.
I don't acknowledge cheaters. I don't care if you've gotten the last 40 hits clean. I don't give a fuck.
And that's the thing is, you know, I was listening to, you know, this has been an ongoing debate, you know, and one thing I always hear people bring up is, well, you still got to hit the ball. You do still have to hit the ball. The fact of the matter is, he was a good hitter.
Yeah.
He was a phenomenal hitter.
Listen, the times that he's describing that he actually took roids, like, he was better before.
And that's the thing is, like, it doesn't matter to me.
Sounds like a him problem.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. He's a nut job.
If he wanted to, he could. I'm not going to disagree. He could easily have 3,000 hits right now.
Right.
He could easily have 3,000 clean hits right now.
Yeah.
But guess what?
But he doesn't because he's selfish and there's way too much money that he's been dealt for him cheating.
I remember when I was so pissed that the Yankees got him instead of us.
Oh man.
No longer.
Oh, hell yeah, man. I mean, let it go. Like
Oh my gosh, talk about dodging a bullet.
Absolutely. That's just
he's just a classless human being, and I'm sorry I don't celebrate someone who gets a record like that. But you, regardless of how many of those hits he wasn't clean for, as opposed to how many hits he was clean for, I don't care if it's one hit that he wasn't clean for. You don't have 3,000 hits in my mind.
Absolutely.
You have 2,999.
He's like Bernie Mac in the movie, you know.
Yeah.
it doesn't count.
It just doesn't. And
it will never count in the eyes of baseball.
No.
And that's what it boils down to.
He's not going to Cooperstown. There's no way.
No.
You can't.
He shouldn't.
Only way he gets in is if Bonds and McGuire get in before him. Yeah. That's the
only
way.
No, I'm sorry. If Pete Rose doesn't get in, then there's no way you let A-Rod.
I think Pete Rose will wind up in there.
I do too.
Got to it
eventually.
Once.
Problem is Pete Rose.
No disrespect.
Dick,
no so disrespect to the old, the older baseball writers out there. But once all those older baseball writers are retired, and the younger guns are stepping up, and they're the ones who get to vote, I bet Pete Rose will end up in the Hall of Fame.
I agree, 100%.
And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm saying if there's any argument about whether A-Rod should get in, then you better be saying that Pete Rose should get in.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
All-time hits leader for crying out loud.
100%. And that's what I'm saying is Pete Rose wasn't he wasn't a moonshot guy like A-Rod where he's bombing homers. He was just really good at his craft.
And yeah, he made some mistakes, but he didn't juice.
No, nope. Not at all. And I also hear arguments like, I love this guy to death. I was listening to the Power Trip Morning Show. It's a show, Twin City Sports Radio. Either way, former linebacker Ben Lieber, they brought the subject up, and former linebacker Ben Lieber was like, well, and I usually love Ben, but he brought up a point. He was like, to pretend that they didn't cheat back in the day is obnoxious. And I was like, you can't prove that at all.
That's a poor statement. Like,
well,
when
you look at the build of a guy like freaking Hank Aaron and the build of A-Rod.
Oh, yeah.
Or McGuire and Sosa. I'm sorry.
It's like you need muscles to hit the ball.
Exactly.
Willie Mays? I mean.
Absolutely. I just. And even going further back than that, it's tarnishing the name of Ted Williams, too. Current manager of the Twins, Paul Molitor, is ninth all-time in that list of hits, and he's got over 3,000.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not once has he ever been linked to steroid use.
Yep.
Ever.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, Hank Aaron, here's the cool thing about Hank Aaron. You take away every single one of his home runs, he's still got more than 3,000 hits.
That's
unbelievable
awesome.
How good of a hitter that guy
That's
was.
That's awesome. Yeah.
All right, let's cover one more topic and then get out of here. What do you guys think? You want to talk? You want to spend a couple minutes on Women's World Cup?
Yeah.
Teach me something.
Go for it.
Please do. Well,
I believe you've probably gotten to watch more than I have because
I've watched all three games.
I've literally only caught the last 20 minutes of U.S. versus Sweden because their games. They haven't had one weekend game yet.
Yeah, they're...
What
they're,
the hell?
No, and...
Why?
I hate to say it, it's not going to get better. They've got a couple weekend games. I think the semifinal and the final.
Even the round of 16 tomorrow is on Monday at 5 o'clock. I'm only going to see the second half of that game.
No, I'm with you. It's a bummer. It is a bummer. Because, people do want to watch the game. I mean, like, soccer's totally trending upwards right now, especially after the latest World Cup.
I agree.
This women's team's gained a lot of traction. They got some really good characters on it,
and it helps when you're the favorite. Like that, it makes more people want to watch.
Well, I do want to talk about that because from what I've seen for the first three games, as well as watching a couple other games,
a little shaky.
They're not the favorite. They're definitely not the favorite. Let's put it this way: if the U.S. continues to play the way they have, they will not win the World Cup. They will not make the final. The best team in this competition right now is Germany.
Yeah,
they're really good.
You can't get only two shots on goal against a team like Sweden and expect to win the World Cup.
To be fair, Sweden might be a bit of an aberration. They're playing against their old coach who knows their strategy and knows all the players. Jill Ellis is Pia Sundhage's former assistant.
Yeah, that's true.
And Sweden's good.
But they've still got to get more than two shots on goal.
Couple things to note about the U.S. just from watching them. Their defense is awesome. I mean, Hope Solo is Hope Solo. You know, forget all the controversy and the nonsense. She's obviously a horrible person, but she's the best.
But that back line, man.
Exactly. That back line, because Becky Sauerbrunn, awesome. Great veteran player. Mm-hmm. But the person who is really stepped up, my future wife, Julie Johnston.
Oh, that's my girl.
She is awesome.
She is the
And she's
best,
brand
dude.
New. Mm-hmm. She's only been playing on the team for like 6 months. She's fresh out of college. She was the captain of the U-20 team. She's just stepped up big time, really, really good. And she's like big physical defender. And her and Sauerbrunn just totally have it down. Klingenberg and Krieger are the other back line defenders. They're good. Krieger needs to step it up a little bit. Interesting thing about Krieger, actually, they're playing on turf, which sucks. And Krieger crosses a lot of long balls to Wambach and Morgan. She keeps overshooting them because she's not used to the turf. The ball rolls too fast. Defense, no problems. They've totally locked down. Their midfield's a disaster. Carly Lloyd and Lauren Holiday, who's actually Drew Holiday's wife.
Formerly
Lauren Cheney last World Cup, and she's married Drew Holiday since. Fun fact for the folks. They're totally out of sync because they're trying to be holding midfielders, and both of them are attacking midfielders, and it's really not working out. Their midfield's in shambles, so they got to figure that out if they're going to win. And so that happens. They figure that out, they're a threat to win, but as things stand right now, they play Germany in the semifinal because they've got two pretty easy games coming.
Colombia,
whatever. Who are actually talking smack? I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, they're talking shit. Yeah. Well, because they're on their high horses right now because they beat France, who was the last team to beat the U.S.
Right. And France is good. It was a good win for Colombia.
Oh, absolutely. No, it was a great win for Colombia.
The problem is that Colombian woman, Lady Andrade, who's been talking smack, she's the one who punched Wambach in the face in the Olympics.
Oh, that's right.
And she's like talking all this noise about the U.S. like, don't respect us. And it's like, oh. Wow. Okay. Like, in case
look for Wambach to score tomorrow night.
In case we didn't
night.
Already have, you know, bulletin board material.
Look for Wambach to put one in.
That'd be great.
To bury one tomorrow night.
I would love that because for starters, like, you know, this is all about, you know, when this World Cup for the U.S. is about winning one for Abby Wambach, and I mean, she's clearly wearing down. She's not the player that she used to be. I mean, she's 35. Nobody's the player they used to be at 35.
The real key is going to be, can Alex Morgan go 80 minutes, go 85 minutes? Because she's still working back from that, the knee injury?
It's like been a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's mostly knee, but I know she hurt her ankle.
It's mostly knee stuff, though, right now. And like, she finally got 60 plus minutes in this past game, right. But that's the first time she's played 60 minutes in a long time. She needs to be able to get up to 80 by the final. Right. If
they need
between
her,
they need her, and they need Megan Rapinoe to keep stepping up because she has
awesome.
Looked good.
I love Megan Rapinoe.
She has been a badass thus far. Yeah.
No, Megan Rapinoe has always been my favorite player on the
US. Fantastic.
She's awesome. She's really good. She's really creative. She's also a fun personality. Like 4 years ago, actually, when they played Columbia, she scored a goal and she ran. They have like these microphones in the corners of the field, mm-hmm. and she ran down to the nearest microphone and realized it was live, like tapped, and then just goes, "Goal!" So the whole like arena could hear. It was hilarious.
That's awesome. Pretty rad.
And, you know, the famous Wombat goal is Rapinoe, who put in, like, a 50-yard cross for that header. Most ridiculous cross I've seen in men's or women's games. She's awesome.
Yeah.
But you're right about Morgan, because I know she didn't play the full game. She didn't look 100%, and she still looked awesome. You know, it just drives you crazy knowing if she was 100%, we'd be killing people.
She's the X factor to this team going all the way.
Her speed
the World
Cup. is a total game changer, because they've got to account for Wombat's size and strength. But they've also got to be fast enough for Morgan. It's like, you know, it's thunder and lightning. And
exactly.
If she gets it together, and she's playing better and better, mm-hmm. you know, more minutes every time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. She looks better every single
right.
game, but it's just like you can't rely on the defense
right.
game in and game out, especially
right.
at this point where it's going OT or it's going
yeah.
a shootout at this point. So
right.
you better put one in regulation.
In shootout, especially in the women's game, is a total lottery because it's not like the men's game where you can kind of change your direction.
Yeah.
Like the U.S. lost the World Cup 4 years ago because they had that shootout against Brazil in the famous game, beat them, and then when they played Japan, they had the same kickers and the Japanese goalkeeper knew exactly where they were going to go.
That was so heartbreaking.
It was the worst.
God.
That was like the worst defeat ever.
Giving up that goal in extra time after we got one ourselves.
And the goal, Sawa, the Japanese striker, wasn't even looking at the goal. She just headed it blindly and like it just went in. It was the most unlucky goal ever.
That was one of the most shocking defeats I've seen in women's soccer ever.
In soccer,
period.
I can't think of a men's defeat that is worse than that, except maybe like when Terry slipped in the shootout against Man United in the Champions League.
That's true.
Maybe that. Besides, though, that was delicious because screw John Terry. But
yeah, fuck Terry,
fuck
the racist bastard.
And slept with his teammate's wife. But yeah, the world knows what a tool John Terry is. But yeah, I mean, the U.S. women, they can't get involved in this shit right now. Here's what it is for them. Don't screw up in the round of 16 of the quarterfinal and be healthy for Germany. You know, that's what it comes down to.
Just get through it in regulation, please. Do not go extra time or you're just...
Don't wear down.
No, you cannot wear yourselves down. You've got to put... You got to bury one early, and then you got to play defense the rest of the game.
They play their game. They should take care of Colombia and whoever they see in the quarterfinal, no problem. But they have to play their best game if they're going to beat Germany. And, I mean, that's assuming Germany gets through, but if somebody beats Germany before the semifinal, it's like the shocker of World Cup history. Germany is playing out of their minds.
And
they're the only other team that's won two World Cups. So it's not like Germany is like a newbie to the party. God, it would drive me crazy if Germany won both the men's and women's World Cups. Just like, come on. I like Germany, but come on.
Screw Deutschland!
Well, anything else?
That's it for me.
Anything else, buddy?
In the words of Woody Harrelson from True Detective, I got geologic out of all that. And the last bit, pure gibberish.
Well,
but I learned a lot.
Well, in the words of Woody Harrelson, Drew, you were drowning, I'd throw you a barbell.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, man.
Fair enough.
No, I'm just kidding.
I believe that we will win.
Well,
that's better. By the way, True Detective.
In the words of...
Let's go.
Ron Burgundy, you stay classy, planet Earth.
All right. Say, like, we have a big San Diego following?
No. All right, so for Christian Schneider.
Thank you very much. Go USA.
For Drew Willers.
Shout out to my cousin Kenny and his now wife Jana, who got hitched yesterday.
Congrats.
I couldn't be at the wedding. Obviously, wish I could have been there, but congratulations to you guys.
Mazel
to my tough. Cousin Kenny, probably the second biggest Vikings fan in the family, aside from, probably the first biggest Vikings fan in my family, aside from my dad, and then my brother, and then my Uncle Steve. Congratulations, go Vikes, and I'll hopefully see you guys soon.
And just a quick little shout out to my Stanley Cup champion, Chicago Blackhawks.
There it is. There it is. Three titles, 6 years. I think we can call that a dynasty.
Dynasty. Dynasty. Yeah, dynasty. Exactly dynasty. Dynasty.
If we're calling the Spurs a dynasty, we're calling the Blackhawks.
Blackhawks are Blackhawks are a dynasty. No, we'll see what happens.
Three and
next.
Six. Absolutely.
We'll see what happens in the offseason. We've got a lot of work to do with not a lot of salary cap space. So we'll
cap
see what
finagling.
Happens. All right. So that being said, I am Tyler Berry. This has been the 51-yard line, and we will see y'all next week.